Okay. So, a short idea then on Vayikra. Vayikra is always a somewhat difficult parsha to talk about because there's a lot of technicalities, and especially in a short period of time, it's hard to get into it. But I happened to see this week an article by Rabbi Chanoch Laxman, which connected Vayikra to Pesach. So I figured now's the season to do that. So Vayikra and Tzav list all the details of the Karbanot, but one thing that stands out is that the Torah draws attention to the fact that you can't include two things in any Karban. One is Chametz, and the other is Dvash. Right, the Pasuk says, right, Kol Mincha, Asher Takrivu LaHashem, Lo Te'aseh Chametz, right, any Mincha that you're bringing cannot be made into Chametz, Ki Chol Se'or V'Chol Dvash, because any leaven, any honey, lo taktiru mimenu yishel Hashem, you can't burn it for a offering for God. Now this pasuk is strange in many ways. First of all, it's the only thing that's listed that you can't have in a karban. But more importantly, it's not the only thing that you can't have in a karban. It's the only thing that's listed that you can't have in a karban. I mean, you can't have a karban which is a giraffe, which is a kosher animal, right? We knew already that it couldn't be chametz because it has to be matzah. It's not like, this isn't like you couldn't have figured this out. Like, we knew that the minchot are all matzot. So it's not just strange that this is the only thing that isn't in the karban. It's not the only thing that isn't part of the karbanot or the minchot. It's just the only thing that the Torah bothers drawing attention to in that negative sense that you can't have chametz and you can't have dvash in the karbanot, which just begs the question, why? Right? It seems like it's just asking you to just think about this question. What is it about chametz and dvash that's antithetical to the notion of karbanot? And obviously, once you realize that fact, so dvash will be hard to figure out in a vacuum, but chametz is much easier because chametz and matzah are things that we actually have reference points for in the Torah. Mm-hmm. Now, the chametz matzah axis, so if you think about it, and this is something we talk about at our Seder, matzah had three roles, right? Two or three roles in the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. It was the food that we ate while we were in Mitzrayim. It's the food that we eat as we're leaving Mitzrayim, right? That's part of the story, that we make matzah on our way out because we have nothing. And therefore, it also becomes the food that we eat while we're, like, in the actual ensuing weeks until we actually get man. So, matzah is with us in all stages of the Mitzrayim experience, in the shibud, in the actual moment of going out, and then in the few days and weeks until we get, well, few days at least, until we get man. We're still eating the leftover matzah. So that our entire experience of Yetziat Mitzrayim is shaped, and we know that, by matzah. And that's why we call the Chag, right? The biblical name for the holiday is Chag HaMatzot, right? Pesach is, not only is that not the name of the holiday, it's the name of a different holiday, right? It's the name of Yudalid of Nisan, not Tetvav, right? Yudalid is Chag HaPesach. It's the day that we bring the Pesach. Tetvav is Chag HaMatzot. If you just follow Chumash, this is not like a Chiddush, we just never think about it, because we call it colloquially Pesach, but it's not in Chumash. It is in Chazal, hence the Masechta Pesachim, but in Torah it's not. The holiday is defined by the Matzah, by Chag HaMatzot. So Chametz, therefore, is the antithesis of the Mitzrayim experience. And this finds expression in other places. So, for example, the and not just does it find expression that way, right? Historically, there also seems to be a resonance to this notion that chametz is the anti-Mitzrayim. So, historically, for example, the Egyptians were the first people to make leavened bread. They were known for making leavened bread, and archaeologists have noted that the chametz matzah distinction may be at many levels a polemic against the polemic against the Egyptian culture. Now, on the other hand, chametz, the one time we do bring chametz, there is one karban a year that we bring, which is chametz, and that is on Shavuot. We bring the shtei lechem. So it's not just that chametz is the antithesis of matzah, but there's actually a progression from matzah to chametz. Pesach is epitomized by matzah, and then we count 7 weeks, and we build up to Shavuot. And Shavuot, we bring the one carbon a year, which is in fact chametz, which is the shtei halechem. Now, dvash as well seems to have, right, once we've noted that chametz seems to be a Shavuot-esque experience, well, dvash also seems to have a Shavuot-esque experience, because dvash, while Chazal here understand it to mean honey, it has another resonance in Torah. Dvash also means tamarim, right, means date honey. But specifically, when do you get date honey? You don't get date honey at the beginning. You get date honey at the end of the harvest, when they're fully ripened, when they're oozing with, right? In Israel, this is very popular. We call it silan, right? You see it here sometimes. But in Israel, that's the go-to sweetener. Silan is when, afterwards there, silan is when the dates are overflowing with their sweetness, and you can make a sort of honey-like sweetener out of the dates. So Rabbi Waxman notes that it seems to be that by saying you can't have chametz and you can't have dvash, what you're sort of saying is karbanot are a Pesach-esque experience, right, which are defined by matzah and the lack of dvash, and we don't want it to be, let's say, a Shavuot-esque experience, which is defined by chametz and defined by dvash, defined by the end of a process. But what does that even mean, right, that karbanot are Pesach-esque and they're not Shavuot-esque? So what he suggests is that, well, why is it that matzah and, you know, non-dvash, let's say, epitomize Pesach, and chametz is specifically brought in Shavuot? He said, well, it seems to be because, specifically, Pesach is a process to Shavuot, right? Chametz is the end of the process. If you let bread get to its final state, you actually let it rise, then you'll get bread. Matzah is when you freeze something at the beginning of the process. You freeze it prematurely. It represents a not fully developed bread. And right, dvash is the ripened date, but the opposite of it would be an unripened date. And if you think of it agriculturally, that's what Pesach is. Pesach is the beginning of spring, when things are beginning to be planted, and right, but you're not harvesting yet. You're beginning the harvest already at Shavuot. So he said, both historically and agriculturally, you can make an argument. The difference between Pesach and Shavuot is whether we focus on the beginning of processes or the end of them, the culmination of them. Pesach is the beginning of a process. It represents the transition from Shibud to getting out, but only that beginning moment, right? Pesach celebrates through basically the seventh day of our exodus from Egypt to the splitting of the sea. But it's the beginning of the process. We're still not developed as a nation. Shavuot, nationally, is when we developed, we became a real nation by getting the Torah. Agriculturally, we reflect that as well. Pesach is the beginning of the season. When things aren't yet ripe, they're beginning to be planted, they're beginning to ripen. Shavuot is when things have started to actually ripen. You start bringing the first fruits. We're already at fruition, right? There's this parallel between the agricultural and the historical nature of Shavuot and Pesach. Based on that, Rabbi Waxman suggests that maybe karbanot are the same thing. Because if you think about karbanot are generated from a sense of lack. A person is bringing a karban because if he's bringing a chata, it's because he has sinned. He has a relationship that needs to be repaired. But at the moment he's bringing the karban, the relationship is still broken. He still is beginning a process to fix the relationship. In ola and ashlamim, right? They're not where you've sinned, but you bring an ola because you feel like you need to do something too. Right? You're bringing it in response to an event, right? If you talk about a todah, right? We bring a todah because we've went through a difficult experience and just at the beginning of the healing process. Right, you've just gotten over the illness. You've just gotten out of prison. You've just come back from the dangers of travel. You bring a karban to thank God, but it's the beginning of the process. Right, everyone knows. You think the person who's getting up to say Hagomel, which is the parallel to the Todah, right? They're getting up often when you still see them jet lagged from their trip. Right, assuming you say Hagomel when you fly back from Israel, so that's when they're just getting used to it. Right, you don't say Hagomel. You don't wait until, you know, you've gotten back in the swing of things. You say it just when you're still reeling from the experience, you're still jet-lagged, or you're still tired. Karbanot are brought not at the end. You don't sit back and say, everything is perfect, and therefore I bring a karban. You bring a karban in response to an experience that you're still reeling from, that you're still developing from, whether it be a sin, right? This is what initiates your tshuva process, whether it be a todah, where you're responding, you're starting to capture what it means to get out of a dangerous experience. So Rabbi Waxman says maybe that's why karbanot are definitionally Pesach-esque experiences. They bring to mind the world of matzah, the world of the spring, not the world of the summer, the world when we talk about the beginning of processes, when as a nation we started, when agriculturally we would begin planting things. It's the antithesis of a karban to think about the end of a process, right? A karban, by definition, is karev. You're trying to be close to God, but you're not yet close to God. You're trying to initiate that. You're trying to improve your relationship. And therefore, the Torah doesn't just say you can't bring it. Because, like we said, you can't bring a giraffe either as a karban. There are a lot of things you can't bring as a karban that you might have thought you could. They're kosher animals. You don't bring as a karban. But there's nothing else does the Torah call out and say, this thing isn't just a non-karban. It's the antithesis of what it means to create kirva with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? And it's these things, right? Chametz and Dvash, those things which represent the end of processes, right? That's not what a karban is. You don't bring a karban because you feel like you're complete. You bring a karban because you feel like you're lacking, like you feel you need to build your relationship with God, either because of an actual negative or just because you feel like you're motivated to build your relationship further with God. And therefore, karbanot are all Pesach experiences. Shavuot is the only exception in the year, right? Shavuot is the one time when we allow you to bring the Shtei Alechem, we allow you to bring in Chametz, because that's the end of the process. That's Chag HaBikurim. That historically is when we became a nation. That represents the culmination of processes. But that's the exception to all rules. Right? We want you to at that moment, right? But that's unique. That represents Shavuot, because from a historical and agricultural perspective, Shavuot is the end of a process, right? But fundamentally, Karbanot, which are about Kirva, right, specifically focus on lack, specifically focus on the beginning of process, to emphasize that there's always that continuing process. We always need to be building on a relationship with God if we want to not just bring a carbon, but understand what it means to become close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, with that, Achag Kasher v'Sameach, and a good Shabbos.